And it's with great pleasure I introduce tonight's speaker, Pancho.
I'm Pancho and I'm an alcoholic. First off, I'd like to welcome everybody, especially the newcomers. The glasses I use because I'm nearsighted to see far away. I wanted to kind of get a range of the group here. Like Bill said, I'm able today to identify as an alcoholic and come here and share my experience, my strength, and my hope without having to trample any traditions. And I say that because just like Bill, I have other dependencies, let's say, chemical dependencies besides alcohol. But what I will do is I will qualify a little bit. I'm not going to go into too much of how to use alcohol. I'm sure everybody here knows how to use alcohol. I don't have to teach nobody how to use alcohol. Or even if you've been sober for a long time, forgot. You know, I just celebrated a birthday on the 10th of February. I had 16 years clean. Thank you, but I also want to say that was done through the group, through everybody that's sitting in these rooms, a God that I've come to understand through all the steps. I was introduced to him on step 3, and I had to do them all, though, in order to be where I'm at today. I gotta say, when I first came here, what has God got to do with me doing what I used to do? You know, and I was thinking on the way up here, you know, I live in a little town called Ivanhoe. I moved there. I'm originally from down south, and there was a family that lived there. There were 6 brothers, and two of them were my age, the 2 are younger ones, and the 4 older ones were my brother, my other brother's age, and we got along real good because we liked the same things. And there was nothing wrong staying up all night and drinking, seeing the sun come up, and then you know, if you had to go to work, you went to work, and then you did other things so you could stay at work. In this valley, a lot of you know, the weather has to do with a lot of work here as far as agriculture, whether it be, I drive truck, you work in a packing house, in cartons, anything that has anything to do like that, the weather affects it. So during the wintertime, I don't know about any of you, but we used to like building a fire. And when times were hard, there was nothing like a bottle of T-Bird. I don't know if any of you, you know what I'm talking about. Okay? You know, that T-Bird for me, it tasted nasty. But that, I was taught we'd get the 5th and get it and turn it up and hit it in the bottom. Okay? And then take the cap off, and then take the neck off, and we'd say, well, get the evil spirits out of it, and then put some lemon in it, and then drink it. And I say this, and it's not to say, oh, you know, you're romancing, or someone's going to leave from here and want to go get loaded. If you want to go get loaded, you want to go get loaded.
Right.
I don't have no power to make nobody get loaded or not get loaded. But like I say, the day I forget what it feels like when I take that first swig and my nose would get a little bit red and my ears would get a little bit warm. Okay? I still remember it. What a shot of tequila feels like. All those things, you know, I beer was because everybody was doing it. That's right. And, you know, wine is fine. Beer is near and liquor's quicker. It was just that simple. And then when I started to go to places that I thought I was too smart that I wasn't going to go to, I learned how to make my own wine by people just the way here, which are my predecessors, taught me how to live different. See, I don't know about you, when I was young, I always hung out with people that were 5, 6 years older than me. You know, when you're 9, 10, and the other kid's 11, 12, 15. Or, you know, everybody, if you remember growing up, that's just the way it was. I grew up in a time where it ain't like now you got all these people that want to kidnap you and have sex with you. I'm not saying there wasn't none of that back then. It was just, you know, you got a stick and you hit that guy, okay? You knew better. That's what we were taught, you know. Don't talk to strangers. Yeah, if he comes and gets too close to you, you hit him. You don't go with them. You don't get in the car. You know, you don't take the candy from them. You don't do, it was common sense. It was taught. At least I was taught that, you know. You know, I would get a whistle, you know, screen door at supper time. You know, go out and play. It wasn't about. Okay, I see here people in here doing that. You know, I got a group that I wanted to. And I'm going to jump around. I wanted to create a position called the hammer. Okay? In my home group. And the position was going to be created. He'd have a hammer in his hand. And every time a member that was there or someone that was sitting there, he'd bring out a phone or device, he'd go with the hammer and go like that. Wham! But I got group conscience didn't agree to it. You know? So, I can say I learned to follow traditions. I came here at a young age. I thought, rules were made to be broken, and I'm the one who's supposed to break them. I'm the youngest of 10. 5 girls, 5 boys. So my brothers and sisters would tell me that I was a fortunate one. Okay? I had a car when I was in 8th grade. So I guess you could say I was a fortunate one. You know. When I went to high school, I got the car. You supply the gas. You supply the money. And everything else that goes with it. And so I always had, you know, people there. Oh yeah, okay, let's go. Let's do. You know. My sophomore year in high school, I graduated high school. I don't even know how I graduated high school, but I graduated. Okay. My sophomore year, I almost got, I was just talking to someone here that works in that profession as a teacher. I didn't go to school on Mondays or Fridays. Okay? Fridays was to kick it off, and Mondays I was still, you know. So I'd go to school Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And I did that, and then at the end of the semester, they tell me, you know what? Either you get it together or you get gone. And I was still a person that said, well, I'm not like them stupid people over there. Okay? I always had this mentality, do it and get away with it. I know. Was it taught? Yeah, because I seen a lot of things that growing up that appeared to be one way, and in reality they were something else. You know, I grew up, I started smoking chemicals and drinking alcohol in 1969. Okay. And I was 12, getting ready to turn 13 years old. And at that time, there was everything you could think of. And I was at that, I don't know if any of you remember that commercial. Here, let Mikey try it. If it did something here, give it to me. Let me see what it does. I don't know. So I end up finding what I liked, and I thought, because I was smart, I'm not going to be like those people that take that certain chemical and get caught and then go to prison. I spent my 21st birthday at the receiving center in Vacaville. And that was the first time that I can say, you know what, man, where am I at? Where did I get myself into? Because I couldn't go home and run to mom. I couldn't go and hide behind the alley. I couldn't go to a friend's house. You know, they wreck that thing, that door opens, you got to go outside. And you're amongst, in the receiving area, there was at least 1,000 people there. And from every walk of life. So what I learned there was more than whatever he had learned prior to getting there, being self-sufficient, self-reliant. God, I'm a Catholic. I'm a cradle Catholic. That means grandma on both sides are Catholics, you know. First communion, confirmation, altar boy, all those things. One thing I didn't do was I didn't get married by the church. But I've been married. And so I knew about God. You know, catechism, that ruler, okay, that those nuns used to like to carry. And I know what it is to, okay, right here, where it hurts. This is where they would hit you, okay? And like I said, I had this understanding of God that if you weren't good and you didn't do the right thing, he wasn't going to do nothing for you. So, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, when you start going through the rite of passage, I kind of got him and just put him in my back pocket. And every time I'd get in a jam, I'd kind of like, hey, God, help me. Hey, God, get me out of this one. Hey, God, get me out, and I won't do it no more. I heard here say, I used to play Let's Make a Deal with God. He'd keep his part, and then I would go, sucker. Because I wouldn't stop doing all the, oh, I'm not going to do that no more. I'm not going to do this. I don't know. So when I got here, and they told me, well, the very first thing you got to do is you got to get abstinent. You know, you have to leave everything you're doing, and then you have to do this program if you want what we have. There's these 12 steps and these 12 traditions. I got clean here. The ABC meeting that's in the morning of it at the Llano Club. That, for me, was a big part of my recovery when I first got here. Because I was a person that every morning I had to go someplace to get what I needed to stay well throughout the day. So I had to go someplace in the morning. And for me, that meeting, I want to say, helped me. They accepted me there. I didn't know nothing about traditions. I didn't know nothing about steps. I sure wasn't going to say I'm an alcoholic. Okay? I just like liquor. But I'm not an alcoholic. Okay? I work hard so I can play hard. That don't make me a bad person. See, for many years after I came out of prison, I got married. I lived on that side of town. I was running a trucking company. She didn't have to work. She had her own car, you know. So that means because I worked hard, I played hard. So that means that I was allowed to do what I had to do. I loved her because I came home every night to her. But it was okay to have a girlfriend and a wife. And on top of that, a Sancha, because girlfriend wasn't always there. Okay? Now, I'll be honest, that's just my way of thinking. I mean, I drove trucks. She didn't, it was better she didn't live in the same town. You know? I tell you these things because you see, this was the behavior and this was the thinking that had to change after I got here and I stopped drinking. See, I thought I was just going to stop drinking and everything was just going to get wonderful and great. And everything was just going to fall in row and everybody was going to do what they had to do and my life would be fantastic. I don't know. There was a gentleman here by the name of Johnny Mack that would get the book and he would slam it and he'd say, "Read the book or die, MF." Okay? And then he would use the MF. And literally, when I got here, it was, you know, it was pretty rough. I mean, there, you know, they got a kind of a kinder, softer way now. You know, I had people tell me, "Here, here's some money. Get gone. Go do what you got to go do." You know? And I'm like, "Whoa, I thought you were supposed to help me." But one thing they told me from day one when I got here was the truth. I might have not liked it. And there might have been today that I learned this. Brutal honesty without compassion is aggression. I learned that from my sponsor. When he told me that, I told him, "God knows what you're talking about, because I don't know what the hell that means." "We will love you until you can love yourself." I remember that one. I'm like, I love myself. I love myself. You would not believe how much I love myself. The fact is, I love myself so much, I take care of myself first. And that was a problem. I did a lot of lip service. "Mom, I love you. Dad, I love you. Children, I love you. Wife, I love you." But today, I know I love them, but I always used to serve myself first. My core of my disease is my selfishness and my self-seeking and my self-centeredness, which I didn't know that was the core of my disease. I always said, "I do what I do because I'm doing for them and so they can have," and you know, and I did. But I always did for me first. And I know that today. And I can still do that today with nothing in me. You know, I come to find that out. I don't need no alcohol and I don't need no chemicals in me. Still think. I've been single for a while. I'll kind of give you love where I'm at. I've got an ex-wife who's been living with me for almost 2.5 years. She's the mother of my children. She's the last 15 months been real sick. She got cirrhosis of the liver. She had Hep C. She's been, you know, the Hep C's gone out because she's already gotten treated for that. This past November 16th, she stood in there about a month. She went from a regular room to ICU. And I thought she was going to die. And this was a person, when I first got clean, the first 4 or 5 years, her name is Maria, but her name wasn't Maria. Her name was That B. That's the way I used to refer to her. Okay? Because I always thought, "Man, it's your fault. Your fault that after we got divorced, I got custody of my boys, and I wanted to blame her. I don't know. I have three sons. I've got one currently that takes care of, which is the youngest. I've got the middle one that just got out in August. Just finished doing 4.5 years in Arizona. I hadn't seen him. He's 32 years old. I've got 16 years clean, and he's been in institutions prior to that, since he was like about 14 and a half. I got custody of him when he was 12 and a half, going to be 13 years old. And the other one was 10 and a half. They're 2 years apart, the two youngest ones. And that boy has not made me, but I've had to learn how to apply the spiritual principles to these steps. He, like I say, he's done all this time. He has showed up at my front door with a bullet in his back, with a towel full of blood, saying, "I can't go to the hospital because I don't want to get busted. I got a homegirl, and I'm going to go over there, and they're going to take the bullet out." And I can understand that behavior. And I can understand that thinking. Because that's there was a time that's the way I thought. I was able to take him to the hospital and able to take the bullet out. This God that I've come to understand has always put somebody there in a, when I'm going through a particular situation, to give me something to help me make it, or I don't have to not necessarily go run out and buy a bottle of tequila. I like drinking tequila, and I know that if I do that, I can change the perception to my reality. Not change reality, but change my perception of it. The world can be falling down beside me. I don't care. I just do some more. Anyway, I remember being in that ER, and I happened to have a shirt on with had a logo of another fellowship, and then he looked at me, and he happened to be just come down transferred from down south too, and he tells me, he goes, "I know you got a lot of things going on in your mind right now, as far as, well, I need to find out who shot my son, so I can go shoot him." You know, I have this mentality still, and I tell people, anybody that's been in a jail, and I'm sure everybody here has been arrested. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you're one of those fortunate that you haven't. But, you know, I went from being an intern at Pine Recovery in 2003 to becoming an administrator and running three group homes at level 12 and two parole homes for hardcore criminals. School, I did all that. And I say that not to, that was just something that's been allowing me to do since I've gotten clean. But through all that experience, like I said, that doctor told me, he goes, "Are you probably thinking of you know, wanting to go out and do something?" You know, because I stood there and I watched him. The bullet that was in him was a 40 Glock. It's about the size of my thumb. The bullet that was in him missed his spine about a quarter of an inch. And then he took it out. And like I said, you know, I had a lot of bad thoughts in my head. And, you know, he just reminded me that if as long as I do what I have to do, and I get out of the way, God will take care of the rest. When this happened, I had coming up on 9 years clean, I think. A little bit of time. But will tell you is this. I have to do everything like the new, those new people that came up that got days. The day I stop doing what they're doing, I will go back out and I will go get loaded again. Because I will forget what has been taught to me here. I forget that I need to. If you're new here, this is one of the, I can't stress this more than anything else. You don't have to hang around with everybody here, but you need to make friends with somebody. And the reason you need to make friends with somebody is because hopefully, before you get that sponsor, you've made that friend, and when that situation comes up that you feel like drinking or feel like harming somebody, you can go to that person and tell them. I never knew how much power there was on telling my secrets. When I tell somebody what I'm keeping to myself, there's no longer no power in that secret, whatever it might be. See, these are the things that I've learned through these steps. I'm like I said, I'm jumping around. I came here and I was told by my sponsor, you're going to have to tell on yourself. Whoa! What are you talking about? Tell? I don't tell. You know, I don't come from there. You know, I tell people like this. I remember being like this, and the officer telling me, "Whose TV is that?" I don't know. "How come that window's broken?" I don't know. So I get here and they tell me, "You got to tell on yourself?" I'm going, "No, I don't think so. That ain't happening. I ain't telling on myself. That don't work." Okay? You know, because I've heard, you know, throw yourself at the mercy of the court. Oh, hell no. That guy wants to send me places I don't want to go. I don't know. And coming from there, and like I said, you know, I'm jumping around and going to school and being that intern and working now with probation, parole, judges. I had boys, I was telling an individual, I had boys from Imperial County, which is Calexico, the border, all the way to Shasta County, which is Ready, and in between, in the homes. And so I worked with a lot of different individuals, you know, drug court, recovery court, domestic violence, pregnant women, teens from the ages of 12 to 19, reentry center in Visalia here at Turning Point. I had a couple of people that I used with come in and tell me, I'm sitting on this side of the desk, I'm going to do the intake, and they're like, "So what's it like here, homie? You know, what are you talking about? You know, what perspective do you want? You want the perspective from that side, or you want the one from my side? Because I got to do my job." You know, these are things that I were learning experience. The very first day I went to work there, and I don't know if the guy did it on purpose, he tells me, "Put some rubber gloves on. We're going to go search." And I remember being there. I used to hate it. They'd come and tear my stuff up. And I'm doing that. And inside me, I've got this war going on, because it's going totally against the grain that I'm used to doing. I'm used to being on the other side. I don't know. Those are the experiences that have allowed me to work with my children. The hardest place for me to work this program is at home. I can do it pretty good in the public. I don't have to tell everybody I see. I was watching the show the other day, and the guy tells the lady, I'm going to call the cops. And she goes, yeah. Nine? Okay. And I thought, oh, okay. I remember that when I used to have to tell people like that. Okay. And like I said, this program, I can do it. I can do it good here. I can do it real good in the public. Not that I do it perfect, but I do it, you know, I do it pretty good. But at home, like I said, I've especially this year, I've been off of work. January the 13th of last year was the last day I drove truck. I'm waiting on an operation on my right knee to a replacement. I did the left one. I need a total shoulder replacement. I've got real bad wear and tear on 3 and 4 right here. I got to do some kind of neck surgery, possibly a lower back. And when I go see the doctors, the first thing they want to tell me is, would you like some Vicodin? Or some Norco? Well, we got this new thing that we're using for pain now, methadone. Okay, we got these pills, methadone pills here. How much do you want? Okay. And my first thing, well, you know what? I'll get them. I won't use them. I'll go sell them because I need money. Because they're not really giving me a whole lot of money from the disability, and then I already exhausted it. Okay? They go like for $3-5. I get, depending on what kind of suckers I get, I think, draw lines out there, see who I catch. See, because I still know how to go fishing with no bait. Okay? See what I catch out there. See, those are the things that I can do. But I know today that if I do the right thing, since I've been here, I've been learning that the right thing happens. Not necessarily what I want, because sometimes what I want doesn't happen the way it's supposed to happen. Okay? It happens the way God thinks is best for me. I was reading the literature just yesterday, and it was talking about being able to feel emotions, all of them. Everybody likes love and joy and happiness, right? You like being sad. You like being hurt. You like being lonely. But these are all things that I've learned to embrace. And I've learned to embrace them because I have to experience them so I can live different. So I don't have to. I shared this yesterday. I was at a birthday meeting. I picked up, it was the last day of my birthday. It was at a book study I do. And I shared this about the 16-year-old son. We had a conversation on Monday. He went down south and he's working over with my cousins originally where I'm from, and they got a construction company. He's doing good. And so when he got out, when he got incarcerated, he had a brand new iPhone 3 at the time, and he had like 90 days use on it, and it stood there because I really don't like. Yeah, I still have that thing. I really don't want you to know where I'm at and what I'm doing. Okay, I resisted having a cell phone when I got clean for a long time. Because like I said, I don't want you to know where I'm at, and I don't want to call you and let you know where I'm at. And I had to because of work, so I had to make changes. I had this old slide phone, so when he was incarcerated about 8-9 months, I told him, you know what, I need a phone. Can I use your phone? I'm going to activate it and put it on my line. He goes, yeah, go ahead. I told him, when you get out, I'll buy you whatever is at the time, I will buy you. So what did he say? I want an iPhone 7 Plus. Yeah. And it goes on gigabytes. More gigabytes and more cars. And I find I'm like, okay, I said what I said, you know. So I put them on my plan and I'll pay the bill back. Don't worry about it, you know. So I call him Monday. He goes, you know what? The bill was due on the 12th, son. and I know you're working. And he starts giving me, you know, to me, the first thing I think I hear, I start hearing the violin. You know. The other part of me comes out, not in recovery, not no spiritual. You think I'm your sucker, I'm your fool? That's what comes out of me. Not, hey, you know, and he tells me the car broke down. I'm like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear your sad stories. And he starts yelling at me. And I just hung up. And he texts me and I told him, when you can call me and not yell, we can have a conversation. And he starts texting me. And that's another thing. I guess I'm behind. I'm like, will you text me? You better be a good friend and I'll return it. I'm not one of those emojis and, you know, happy, sad faces. You know, I feel it's very impersonal. You know. So, you know, at the end of his texting, you know, I told him, after he runs me off, I told him, look, I've only told you a few words. Don't worry about it. I'll call. And the deal was, I told my other son, we were sitting down yesterday, I told him, your brother needs to be responsible and call me and tell me, Dad, I can't make the phone bill. Okay. See, I've learned that here. Before it was like this, when I had my bills. When I used to pay them. Not a whole lot, okay? I tell the people, I'm going to get the hat. And everybody that I owe, I'm going to throw them in the hat. And I pull it out, you get lucky. But you keep bothering me, I'm not going to even throw you in the hat. Okay? So don't be bothering me. Okay? Today, I want to pay my bills. You know, today, if I don't pay my bill on time, I feel uncomfortable. But I also know today that if I pick the phone up and I call whoever I need to call, let them know, this is my situation, this is what's going on, they'll say, okay, we'll give you some time. This might sound like nothing, but I didn't know how to do that. Smell smoke? You got burned. Okay? That's it. You ain't getting paid. Alright? Like I say, these are things that I'm telling you. Everything that I'm telling you, I've learned it through the 12 steps. The same gentleman, Johnny Mack, would say, those 12 steps are for you so you won't commit suicide. And those 12 traditions are for you so you won't commit homicide. Didn't know what the hell he was saying. But I remember him saying that. And I remember him going like this too. Because his God thing was kind of like, if you don't have a God, here's my God. You can use my God until you can get a God of your own. That man affected me. There was another gentleman by the name of Alan, big guy, biker guy. And I guess I was attracted to these people because they were like me. You know, I was 43 years old when I got here. I'm turned 59 in October. I'll be 60 in October. And at 43 years, when I got here, only thing I could see was either retirement for the state of California or the cemetery. Because I just didn't believe I would ever change. I was going to do what I was doing until the day that I died. And that was it. And the people that I was running around with, that's what they told me. We don't change. This is what we are and this is what we're always going to be. I came to these rooms and they told me different. Yeah, you're always going to be an alcoholic. Okay? That's, you know, the only difference is you don't have to be a using alcoholic. You can be complete abstinent and be sober. You know, the word sobriety here, I didn't use it. All these things that I'm talking about, that's what it is. See, being sober is you just don't got no chemicals in you. Okay, you don't got no alcohol. And I say chemicals because if you read that bottle of Thunderbird, there's really no alcohol in there. Okay? I thought it was made out of grapes and stuff. Read that label. They still sell it. You go to fine stores, you can find that short dog. Okay? Unless you find yourself a fifth. And read the label. There's no alcohol in there. They're chemicals. Okay? So, I thought I was going to have to live like that. But there was no other way. But I came here and they told me, there's a different way to live. There's things that you must do. You have to stop using. You have to be abstinent. You have to be sober. And if you want a better life, you need to work those steps for yourself. And you need to work those traditions so you can be able to live with other people. Because if you don't, you're going to hurt them. I'm going to say this, and my time's about up. My sponsor told me, I no longer have to harm no one. Emotionally, spiritually, or physically. Intentionally or unintentionally, no more. I had no, like I said, these things were foreign to me. But today I understand what he means. It's taken me a while. I don't know. I'm grateful for to be on this journey. But most of all, what I want to tell you is this. You never have to drink again, even if you want to. Thank you for allowing me to share.